us around with no idea that we are their enemies. Marcel, how could you take such a risk? You think that is risky? Toasting with the enemy. Oh, Ruby, how little you understand.
She clenched her fist. I hate this occupation as much as you do, Marcel. You have to stop speaking to me as if I'm an uneducated fool.
I know you're educated.
He raked a hand through his thick, dark hair and gave her a perplexed look.
But you must admit that as an American, you lack a certain perspective.
It's always about me being an American, isn't it? My God, Marcel, why did you marry me if you felt I was so inferior?
Inferior? The confusion on his face deepened. I've never thought you inferior, Ruby. I admire you. I admire your intelligence, your wit.
But you talk down to me all the time.
I don't.
He was silent for a moment, and then looked away as he swayed once more.
I don't mean to, in any case. I just wasn't prepared for someone who wanted to argue with me the way you do.
She could feel herself softening slightly. I don't want to argue either, Marcel. I just want you to talk to me, to trust me.
Ruby, I...
He looked at her for a long time, his gaze focused and unwavering. She resisted the urge to wilt, and instead stared back, telling herself that whatever he had to say, she would withstand it. But then he surprised her by leaning in and pressing his lips to hers, so softly and gently that at first she wondered if she was dreaming. She was so startled that she didn't kiss back, so he pulled away.
Ruby, he murmured.
I was so sure you didn't love me anymore, she whispered. His eyes filled with tears.
Of course I love you, he said. It's myself I cannot live with.
And then his lips were on hers again, more insistent this time, and her body responded. He loved her after all, and she could feel it in the way he touched her, the way he pulled her to him, the way he drank her in like a man who'd just crossed a desert. Soon, his hands were beneath her skirt, tugging at her undergarments, sliding toward places they hadn't been since that late spring night after the bombs had fallen, before the Nazis took Paris. She moaned despite herself, as he lifted her dress over her head and peeled his own shirt off. His chest was just as solid as she remembered, but there was no time to think about that as his hands and then his mouth began to travel over her body. He led her to the bedroom, and as they fell into bed, she wasn't thinking about the Dachshunds, or the Germans, or the way the world was falling apart around them. She was thinking about the fact that here, in this moment, her marriage wasn't crumbling. Perhaps there was a life in front of them after all. 10 weeks later, Ruby sat on her terrace, watching the sky tumble into darkness, her head in her hands. It was Christmas Eve, and she was bundled up against the cold in one of Marcel's old sweaters. She still felt the chill in her blood, in her bones. She knew she should go inside where there was a small fire burning, but she couldn't make herself move. The fear of what was to come paralyzed her. Ruby was pregnant. She was sure of it. She was ravenously hungry all the time, though she could hardly keep food down. And she had twice missed her time of the month. There was no other explanation. She was filled with both terror and joy at the prospect of a baby. Paris was dark and lonely, and as the fighting raged on across Europe, it seemed that things were growing tenser by the day. Bringing a child into a world at war seemed foolish. But perhaps bringing a child into a home like hers was even more so. After that night, 10 weeks ago, Marcel had returned to vanishing for days at a time, and when he was home, he hardly looked at her anymore. He hadn't noticed the swelling in her breasts, the way she moved like she was in possession of a special secret. Ruby? Charlotte's timid voice wafted over from the next terrace, and Ruby sat up with a start. She hadn't heard the girl emerge from her apartment.
Is something wrong?
Oh, I'm all right, Ruby forced a smile. What are you doing out here without a coat? You'll catch your death of cold.
I just wanted to say Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you, Charlotte, and a Merry Christmas to you too. She realized immediately that it was the wrong thing to say. I'm sorry. I mean, happy Hanukkah. Has Hanukkah started yet?
It is just beginning, Charlotte hesitated. Perhaps it's a sign, our holidays falling at the same time. Perhaps this is the year we will all come together.
God willing, Ruby murmured. She knew that Charlotte had absorbed her parents' worries in the last few months. Throughout the city, shops owned by Jewish people had been taken over by what the Germans were calling provisional managers, businessmen ousted from their own businesses. Monsieur Daché, Ruby knew, had been forced to comply last week. And though he still went into his fur shop, he was treated as an employee rather than as the man who'd built the lucrative business from the ground up. It must have been demoralizing, humiliating.
Are you sure there's nothing wrong, Ruby? Charlotte asked after a long pause. You don't seem yourself.
Nothing you need to worry about, Charlotte.
But maybe I can help. I want to help.
Ruby smiled into the darkness. Maybe it wouldn't hurt to share her news.
Can you keep a secret? Of course.
Ruby got up and walked to the edge of her terrace so that she was just a few feet away from the girl.
I'm going to have a baby.
Charlotte's eyes widened.
A baby? Oh, Ruby, this is the best Hanukkah gift I could have asked for.
Ruby laughed. Well, the baby won't arrive until the summer.
That's okay. It will be just so exciting, don't you think? Oh, this is such wonderful news. Is Monsieur Benoit very happy?
I haven't told him yet. I'm not quite sure how he will feel. Charlotte looked confused.
Surely he will be overjoyed.
Ruby looked away.
Surely. Well, you must tell him as soon as possible. He's going to be a father. It will be the perfect Christmas gift.
Perhaps Charlotte was right. There was no reason to keep the news from Marcel any longer. He was bound to notice soon enough, and perhaps telling him now would bring about a Christmas miracle. Maybe the Marcel she'd fallen in love with would finally come back. Maybe his focus would shift to planning a family with her. She would make sure that he knew from the start how much she needed him, and he would feel useful again. That night, just past midnight, Marcel crept quietly through the front door. Before he'd had a chance to hang up his coat and hat, Ruby lit a candle. "Merry Christmas," she said, eager to get the words out before she changed her mind. "We're going to have a baby, Marcel. Isn't it wonderful?" He stared at her before replying,
"A baby?"
"I'll need your help, of course," she said brightly, hoping her enthusiasm would be contagious. "There's so much to be done before the baby arrives."
"You're having a baby," he repeated flatly.
"We're having a baby." For a moment, neither of them moved. Then, slowly, deliberately, Marcel strode toward the doorway, where he put his hat and his coat back on. When he turned around, Ruby was so surprised by the sadness in his eyes that she sat back in her chair, breathless.
"Oh, Ruby, what have we done?" he asked in a strangled voice.
"But
this is a huge mistake."
And then he was gone, slamming the door so hard that a glass perched on the edge of their curio cabinet plunged to the floor and shattered. For a long time, Ruby sat motionless, staring at the broken shards.
Chapter 7. January 1941.
A baby. It was nearly all that Charlotte could think about. What a lucky child, to be born into a home with a loving mother and father, where the parents were allowed to work. Her own home life had been greatly disrupted by her father's recent situation.
"Those Nazi bastards," Papa said on a snowy night in January, as
Charlotte sat huddled with her parents around the kitchen furnace. Fuel was scarce, and they were burning an old dining room chair. It had been stored in the closet near the front door for occasions when they might have guests. But Charlotte supposed that wouldn't be happening for a while.
"Ruven, your language," Maman said,
casting a glance at Charlotte.
It's okay, Charlotte said. I know many bad words.
Her father fixed her with a glare.
Well, you should not. You are a lady.
And yet, you curse in front of her all the time, Maman pointed out.
Papa sighed and looked away.
It is the time we are living in. One cannot help but become emotional.
This is not the first time we've endured desperate circumstances, Maman said.
Maman and Papa exchanged looks, and Charlotte knew they were thinking about the Great War. Maman had lost 2 brothers. Papa had lost his twin, Michel. All had fought for the French army.
I know,
Papa murmured softly, squeezing Maman's hand. Charlotte knew she had promised Ruby that she wouldn't reveal her secret, but in the heavy silence, something made her blurt it out.
Madame Benoit is having a baby.
Maman and Papa both turned to stare at her.
Madame Benoit, Maman asked.
Charlotte knew she'd made a mistake by saying something, but there was a sparkle in her mother's eyes now that hadn't been there before.
Yes, she mumbled, but it is supposed to be a secret.
Oh, my, Papa looked worried. But how will a baby survive in the midst of all this?
They are not Jewish, Maman reminded him.
I suppose, but still, to bring a child into war.
It will end soon, Maman said.
Papa shook his head.
It will not end until all of France has become German, and when that happens, we will not be here to witness it.
Why? Charlotte interjected. Where are we going?
Her father turned to her, an almost dazed expression on his face.
We are not going anywhere, my dear Charlotte.
He wouldn't meet her eye.
Of course, we are not going anywhere.
Charlotte worried constantly that Ruby would know her confidence had been betrayed, so when she saw her standing on the terrace on a frigid morning in late January, she rushed outside to confess.
I told Mama and Papa about the baby, she said, her words tumbling out. I'm so sorry. I know it was meant to be a secret.
Ruby turned to her with a weary smile. Her cheeks were sunken, her face drawn, and she was too tightly bundled in sweaters and overcoats for Charlotte to see whether her belly had grown.
Oh, Charlotte, it's fine. I would have told them myself whenever I next saw them.
Ruby took a sip from a steaming mug.
How are your parents? I haven't seen them in more than a month.
Charlotte looked down.
They are fine, thank you.
The truth was that they were anything but. Papa was barely sleeping. At night, he pored over his account books and slammed his fists on the table. And Mama had slipped deeper into a depression that Charlotte didn't understand. Maybe when Ruby's baby came, it would bring Mama back to life. Ruby's own mother was all the way back in America, so surely Ruby would need Maman's help. Ruby studied Charlotte for a long time, giving Charlotte the distinct feeling that she could see right through her. After a while, she smiled sadly.
And how are you, Charlotte? Is school going well? I suppose, although my only friend Micheline left for the South with her family 3 weeks ago. Papa says that even if I feel lonely now, I must hold my head high and pretend I don't hear the things the others are saying about Jews.
Before Ruby could begin to feel sorry for her, though, Charlotte changed the subject, blurting out the question that had been weighing on her mind.
And Monsieur Benoit, he is very happy about the baby, too?
Something flickered across Ruby's face.
Oh, yes. I think he will make a wonderful father.
Charlotte nodded, but before she could say anything else, she heard her mother calling for her from inside.
I'm sorry, she said. I must go to school now.
Of course. I'll see you later, then. And Charlotte, whenever you feel lonely, remember you have me for a friend. Charlotte couldn't shake the conversation with Ruby all morning. She sat through her teacher's lectures with her mind whirling as she replayed the look on Ruby's face again and again. Her words about Monsieur Benoit making a wonderful father had sounded like a lie. But how could they be? Then again, Monsieur Benoit was a bit of a mystery. Charlotte sometimes felt guilty because Ruby had made a point of calling Charlotte her friend. But Charlotte hadn't been completely honest with her. Wouldn't a friend tell another friend that her husband was keeping secrets? She knew only that late at night, when she couldn't sleep, she sometimes heard Ruby's husband whispering to people in the hall outside her door. Once in a while, there were movements, too, shuffling, scraping, clicking sounds that didn't make sense. Now that Ruby was going to have a baby, Charlotte knew that she must find out what Monsieur Benoit was up to. It was the least she could do. Ruby had called her a friend, after all. So that night, after her parents were asleep, Charlotte crept out of bed and into the parlor. She felt fiercely protective of her neighbor all of a sudden, and as she sat in the darkness, waiting, she realized it was because of the look in Ruby's eyes when she'd talked of Monsieur Benoit that morning. Charlotte didn't understand what it was exactly, but she knew something was wrong. The hours ticked by, and Charlotte fought off the urge to fall asleep. By 2:30 in the morning, she began to think that she was being a fool. She had just gotten up to return to bed when there was a noise in the hall. She gasped and tiptoed to the door to look through the small peephole. It was Monsieur Benoit. He was dressed in a dark overcoat that glistened with snowflakes. He had just come in from the cold, long past the curfew, and now he was standing in the hallway, crouching, really, and breathing hard. Charlotte stood as still as she could, but she had to stop herself from inhaling sharply a few seconds later when the front door to the building opened a crack. There was a noise on the stairs, and then there was a shadowy figure standing just outside Charlotte's door. "The bird flies at night," the person said softly, and Charlotte was startled to realize that the voice belonged to a woman. Had Monsieur Benoit taken a mistress? While Ruby was pregnant? Icy anger coursed through Charlotte's veins.
"Only through the storm," Monsieur Benoit murmured back.
It made no sense at all, but at least it wasn't the amorous reply of a man to his paramour.
"Yeah,"
the woman said, producing a small parcel from beneath her cloak and thrusting it at him.
"Be careful."
And then she was gone again, down the stairs and out into the snowy night. Charlotte remained as still as a statue in the silence that followed. For a long time, Monsieur Benoit just stood there, clutching the parcel and staring at the front door. It was almost as if he was expecting someone else. Then, finally, he seemed to snap out of his trance. All at once, he was a flurry of motion, unwinding the strings of the package and pulling out its contents, which, in the darkness, Charlotte could barely see. But it seemed to be a collection of men's clothing, a tin of something, and a few fat sausages. What on earth? Just when Charlotte thought the night couldn't get any stranger, Monsieur Benoit stepped to the blank wall opposite his apartment, looked around, and pressed on one of the panels on the lower right side. This time, Charlotte couldn't contain her gasp as a small door slid open and Marcel slipped inside. There was a hidden compartment in the hall, large enough for a man? A moment later, he reemerged, his arms empty, and touched the wall again. The door slid closed, and Monsieur Benoit looked furtively around once more before entering his own apartment, which Charlotte could see clearly because her doorway sat in the corner of the building, overlooking the whole hall. Charlotte wanted to venture out to test the hidden door for herself, but if Monsieur Benoit heard her, she would certainly be in trouble. So, she resolved to wait until the next time she saw him leave at night. She would learn then what secrets he was hiding, and she'd tell Ruby when the time was right. That's what a true friend would do. Chapter 8. January 1941. By the start of the new year, death was everywhere. Oliver had been shot down over the outskirts of London just after the 1st of January, and John Stevens had plunged into the English Channel after taking down 3 enemy Messerschmitt Bf 109s. Still, Thomas kept fighting. He was feeling more and more at home in the cockpit. The spit had become almost like an extension of himself. He didn't even have to think about how to get it to do his bidding anymore. It wobbled and wove with the slightest tick of the column. And even though the logical part of his brain reminded him that he could die at any moment, he felt invincible, soaring through the heavens at one with the bright blue sky. The condolence letter home to Oliver's mother would be difficult. And as Thomas sat down to write it, late one night at the base in South Wales where they had been stationed since late summer, he couldn't help but think of his own mother. He owed her a visit, but he hadn't been granted leave in quite a while. It was an all-men-on-deck situation. Nearly every night since early September, the Luftwaffe had bombed London. The city was burning, people were dying, and it was up to the RAF to put a stop to it. Some nights, it felt impossible. Other times, Thomas looked down at London below and marveled at the way the churches and monuments still stood tall, thumbing their noses at the Germans. Thomas's mother still lived there, not far from St. Paul's Cathedral, and despite the fact that the bombings were continuous, she was insistent upon staying put.
"This is my home, Thomas," she'd written in her last letter. "If I let the Germans force me to leave, they've won, haven't they?"
He had replied right away, reminding her that the Germans would also win if they managed to take her life.
"Won't you consider departing for a time, Mother?" he'd asked. "Harry's Aunt Cecilia in Lawton would love to have you stay for as long as you'd like. I'm certain I can take a few days' leave to help you get settled."
But he hadn't received a reply. And now, as he began to write the letter honoring Oliver's life, he tried not to think about what it would be like for his own mother to receive such a note one day. After all, they had only each other. His father had died when Thomas was a boy, and there was no other family to speak of.
"Dear Mrs. Smith," he began, "as you may know, Oliver and I were friends since the first day we met at Desford. He had a special way about him, a talent for making the fellows double over with laughter. Now, though we still try to maintain some sort of levity, if only to save ourselves from succumbing to fear and sadness, it's simply not the same. Oliver died a hero. As you must know by now, he shot down 2 German planes near London on the very night he died. Your son saved dozens, if not hundreds, of lives. It's little consolation, but..."
Thomas had just paused, considering exactly how to frame his words of comfort, when there was a loud knocking. He checked his watch. Nearly midnight. A knot in his stomach, he set down the pen and walked to the door.
"Clark."
It was Thomas's CO, his expression weary.
"Sir, has something happened?"
The CO hesitated for a moment.
"It's your mother, Clark."
Thomas's vision went blurry for an instant.
"My mother, sir."
"Her home was hit," the CO said, not quite needing Thomas's eye.
"She didn't make it. I've just received confirmation."
Thomas's mouth went dry.
"Sir, you're saying..." "She died, Clark. I'm very sorry." "No. No, that can't be."
How many flights had he flown over London? How many plots had he chased off? How many planes had he downed? He had fooled himself into thinking that he could keep his mother safe. After all, there were signs that the RAF was regaining control of the British skies. And every time he soared over the city where he'd been born and raised, every time he saw the dome of St. Paul's, he imagined that he could see his childhood home below the smoke and clouds.
"When?"
he asked.
"I thought there hadn't been a major attack since the 29th of December."
That was the night the Nazis had dropped more than 100,000 bombs on London, pummeling the city's heart. His CO hesitated.
"She was injured that very night, Clark. Apparently her home was hit directly. It took rescuers a long time to sift through the rubble, and she was barely alive when they found her. She never woke up, and it took some time to identify her."
Thomas wanted to scream, but he was paralyzed.
"Do you know..."
He took a deep, shuddering breath.
"Do you know exactly when she died, sir?"
What good was he doing in the cockpit if he was powerless to save the person he cared most about in the world?
6 days ago. I'm very sorry."
6 days. 6 days when he'd been worrying about Oliver's family. 6 days when he'd smiled and laughed and believed everything was normal. She'd been gone that whole time and he hadn't felt it. Somehow this was as hard to bear as the death itself.
"Clark, you'll need to take care of arrangements," the CO said after the silence grew heavy and thick. "I will plan for you to have a few days' leave."
But I should be here. Who will stop the Nazis?
The CO cracked a tired smile.
There's a whole squadron of men out there trying to do just that, and many other squadrons across Britain, Clark. We'll make it without you for a day or two.
I can't.
You must.
The CO's smile faded.
I'm led to believe you're her only kin.
Yes, sir.
It wasn't until that moment that Thomas realized how very true those words were. He was alone in the world now.
Is there anything I can do?
No, sir.
Thomas could barely hear his own voice over the rushing sound in his ears. He longed to look into his mother's eyes, to see her bright smile, to feel her thin, fragile arms around him once more. He could remember her patiently teaching him to read, walking him to his first day of school, smiling as she proudly served a roast for just the two of them nearly every Sunday afternoon of his boyhood. He could see the worry in her eyes the day he told her he was joining the RAF, but also the pride.
"Be well and safe, Thomas," she had said, cupping her small, worn hands on either side of his face. "Just come home to me."
As his CO bid him good night and Thomas closed the door, he realized there was no one else in the world to wait for him now.
Chapter 9. April 1941.
When Ruby awoke on an April morning with dawn filtering through the curtains, she was alone for the second day in a row. Marcel had disappeared more than 48 hours ago with no indication of when he'd be back. "One day," she said to the baby, "this war will be over, and we'll have a good life, you and I. Your papa will be there too," she added as an afterthought. "He's going to love you very much." She smiled at the sharp kick that she could see through the wall of her belly. And then, with her stomach rumbling, she got out of bed to begin her day. Ruby often awoke with a drumbeat of movement deep in her womb now, making her feel less alone. She had decided that the baby was a boy, that he would look very much like Marcel, and that when Marcel first laid eyes upon him, it would change everything. Perhaps she was as naive as he accused her of being, but she preferred to think of it as hopeful. She had just put on her dress, one of three Empire Waist cotton maternity dresses she'd sewed from a pattern, when there was a knock at the door. She answered, and found a small, bald, middle-aged man with thick glasses standing there, clutching his hat to his chest. He stared at her for a moment, and she at him. His clothes were rumpled, but there was something about his posture and bearing that hinted at a dignified station in life. "Can I help you?" she asked. He glanced from her face to her belly and back again before clearing his throat.
"I'm looking for the man of the house," he said,
his flawless French inflected by an accent that Ruby couldn't quite place. "He's not here right now," Ruby said. "Perhaps I can assist you with something?" The man hesitated.
"I hadn't realized Monsieur Benoit had a wife."
"May I ask how you know him?" The man's repeated glances at her belly were making her uneasy.
"You are expecting a child, I see."
"You are quite observant," Ruby said. When the man looked up, apparently startled by her tone, she thought she saw something like kindness in his eyes for an instant, but then it was gone.
"He should have informed us."
"Who are you?" Ruby demanded. When the man didn't answer, she added, "You are not French."
"Of course I am."
The man was already backing away. "Wait! Won't you tell me who you are?" But the man had already turned and was hurrying down the stairs. The last thing she saw before he disappeared out the front door was one final concerned glance at her belly, as if she was concealing a bomb that could explode at any moment, destroying them all. By the time Marcel returned, late that night, Ruby had gone over the strange encounter again and again in her head, and with each repetition she'd felt more unsettled. The man's accent had been hard on the consonants, a bit like the way Nazi soldiers spoke when they were barking orders. "My God," she thought, her stomach turning, "what if Marcel is helping the Germans?" And suddenly, the pieces were falling into place, and Ruby felt ill. his long absences, his lack of regard for the German regulations as if they didn't apply to him, the war of morals she could see going on inside him. It all made sense. But how could he do such a thing? To collaborate would be unconscionable. "You had a visitor today," she said when he slipped in the door. He visibly startled. He hadn't expected to find her glaring at him from the dining table.
"What are you doing out of bed?"
It wasn't the reply of an innocent man.
"Waiting for you."
He stared at her across the flickering darkness.
"What do you mean I had a visitor?"
"A man," she said slowly. "A man who seemed stunned to realize I existed." As Marcel opened and closed his mouth like a fish, she could feel her heart hardening. He had put them in danger, Ruby and the baby, and he had the gall to stand there looking affronted?
"Well, who was it?"
Ruby looked him straight in the eye. "Your handler, I assume."
"What?"
"Or perhaps that's not the right term.
Der Meister, is it? Is that not how they say it in German?"
His face turned white.
"Der... what? The man who came here was German?"
Ruby stood slowly, her hands cradling her belly. "You're going to deny it, Marcel?" He blinked rapidly.
"How do you know he was German, Ruby? What did you tell him?"
"What did I tell him? Nothing. He just seemed appalled that you had a pregnant wife. I'm sorry if I'm getting in the way of your Nazi scheming. How inconvenient." Marcel stared for another moment before moving toward her. She took a step back, putting her hand protectively on her belly, and he halted.
"I'm not going to hurt you, Ruby."
He sounded suddenly weary. He took a seat at the table and gestured to the chair she'd just vacated.
"I would never, ever hurt you. Sit, please."
Ruby moved the chair away from the table, putting some distance between them. "What could you possibly have to say that would make this all right?"
"I'm not helping the Germans. I would sooner die, Ruby."
"Don't lie to me. He certainly wasn't French." He bit his lip.
"You must take me at my word. I need to leave you out of this. For your own safety."
"It's hard to feel safe with Germans at our door."
"He wasn't German, for the love of God, Ruby."
"Then who was he? What was he doing here?" Marcel didn't answer right away. He stood and began to pace.
"You are speaking of a man who's a little shorter than I. Bald? Glasses?"
"Yes." He was silent for a long time.
"He goes by Neville, although I assume that's not his real name. He's British intelligence."
"What?"
"I've been working with him. For him."
But was he telling the truth? And if he was, how had she read him so wrong?
"He shouldn't have come here. But now you know."
"I don't understand. You're working for the Allies? Why didn't you tell me?"
"Because you're in danger now, don't you see that? You weren't supposed to be involved in any of this, ever. It's my risk, not yours."
"But I'm your wife, and if you get caught..."
"I'm not going to get caught."
Ruby took a few deep breaths to calm herself. The baby was kicking again.
"I understand the stakes, Marcel." "Do you?"
His face twisted into a sneer.
"As far as I know, you'll be telling the neighbor's girl in no time."
"I would never do that. You don't think I know how important this is? How dangerous?" He looked balefully at her belly.
"You don't understand things the way I do, Ruby. That much is clear."
"How can you say that, Marcel? I'm not the fool you've decided I am. I'm your wife and I'm carrying your child. We're all in this together whether you like it or not." He looked at her for a long time before his expression darkened. He smashed his fist against the wall with such force that he left a mark.
"I'm..."
Marcel began, looking down at her. She was sure he was about to apologize for his temper, but then he stopped.
"You will stay out of this," he said once more, firmly.
That isn't a request.
And then he strode across the apartment, slamming the front door behind him. By the time Ruby managed to fall asleep a few hours later, she knew in her gut that Marcel was telling the truth. She had played and replayed the visit from the bald man in her head, and she had to admit his accent had sounded British. But wasn't Marcel's decision to work for the Allies without telling Ruby a betrayal too? She awoke just before dawn with an intense pain in her lower back. She cried out and rolled to her left, looking for her husband. But his side of the bed was cold and empty, as it so often was these days. She struggled to sit upright, a hand on her belly, as if she could protect the baby from whatever was happening. "It's okay," she murmured, as much to the child as to herself. "Everything's going to be all right." But then there was a searing pain in her abdomen, and she doubled over, nearly falling out of bed. She grabbed the edge of the mattress to steady herself and pushed herself onto the floor. She needed help. She needed to make it to the Duchesse's apartment. They would know what to do. She collapsed at the bedroom door as her body was racked by another wave of agony. Her cotton nightgown was soaked with sweat by the time she made it down the hall. She cried out and fell to her knees at the Duchesse's doorway, but she managed to knock once and then again more insistently until she heard hurried footsteps approaching. The door swung open, and she looked up to see Monsieur Duchesse standing there, white-faced, a candlestick hefted like a weapon. His fierce expression softened when he saw her.
"Madame Benoit, what has happened?"
He put a hand under her elbow to help her up. She was startled to realize she was crying.
"I don't," she attempted, trailing off. "I can't."
"Sarah," Monsieur Duchesse called into the darkness of his apartment, "come quickly. It's Madame Benoit."
A moment later, Ruby looked up to see a bathrobe-clad Madame Duchesse rushing down the hall, tailed by a stricken-looking Charlotte.
"I'm okay, Charlotte," Ruby managed. "Don't worry. Go back to bed."
Madame Duchesse turned and said something to the girl, and although Charlotte looked worried, she retreated into the apartment, leaving the three adults alone.
"Madame Benoit,"
as Madame Duchesse bent down beside Ruby and placed a cool hand on her cheek, her voice was soft and comforting, the way Ruby imagined a mother would speak to a child.
She would speak to her own child that way, Ruby decided. Reassuring, gentle, firm, it was perfect.
"What is it? Are you all right?"
"I don't know," Ruby managed. "It's just something is wrong with my belly."
Another sharp pain crackled through her, radiating out from the center of her body, and she moaned again. When she looked up, something had changed in Madame Duchesse's face.
"Oh, my dear," her neighbor said in that same soothing tone.
"Let's get you up, shall we? Yes, that's right. Hold on."
Ruby couldn't seem to feel her legs, so she wasn't quite sure how she got to the couch, the ornate gold-legged one in the Duchesse's living room that she'd admired on the one occasion she'd been invited inside. But there was Madame Duchesse beside her, placing a cool, damp washcloth on her forehead and murmuring for her to lie back.
"What's wrong with me?" Ruby managed. "Is the baby all right?"
"Oh, dear,"
Madame Duchesse said, kneeling beside Ruby and squeezing her hand.
"I'm afraid your baby might be coming just now. My husband has gone for a doctor."
"Coming now?" Ruby repeated in disbelief, struggling to sit up. "No, no, it's too early. Far too early. I'm only 6 months along. And what about Marcel? Marcel should be here."
"Shh," Madame Duchesse whispered, her voice soft and song-like. "We'll find Monsieur Benoit, dear. Everything is going to be all right. You just relax."
Ruby was about to answer, but this time when the pain in her belly returned, it was so blinding that she lost consciousness, slipping into a silent, jagged darkness. When Ruby awoke, there was sunlight streaming through the window. It took her a few seconds to get her bearings, to remember the terror and the pain that had brought her here.
The baby.
"Madame Duchesse," she cried out, sitting up with great effort. Her whole body ached, and she was still on the couch, covered in a white sheet and a faded blue blanket someone had knitted.
Madame Deschay?
It was Charlotte who emerged from the kitchen instead, her face pale.
Ruby, are you all right?
I don't know. What happened? Charlotte seemed at a loss for words.
I'm going to go get my mother, okay?
Charlotte? Ruby felt suddenly shaky, unsure.
Is everything okay with the baby?
She began to reach for her belly, but Charlotte thrust a cup of tea into her hands instead.
Yeah, drink this. I'll go get Mama.
By the time Charlotte returned with her mother in tow, Ruby already knew. She had felt the contours of her deflated belly through the blanket, sensed the emptiness in the space where life had grown.
I lost the baby, didn't I?
She asked in a whisper, her vision blurred by tears. Madame Daché waved Charlotte away, and as the girl disappeared down the hall, Madame Daché sat down beside Ruby and took her hands.
My dear, I am so sorry. The baby was stillborn.
No, Ruby whispered. The doctor arrived soon after you lost consciousness and gave you something for the pain. The baby was already coming. He never breathed. He didn't cry. He didn't feel a thing.
It was a boy, Ruby said dully. It was just like she'd imagined, a boy in Marcel's image. He was gone before he'd ever lived. Madame Daché nodded, squeezing Ruby's hand.
I'm so sorry.
May I see him?
Madame Daché looked surprised.
Oh, I'm sure you don't want to.
Ruby cut her off. Please, I must see my baby. Madame Daché looked at her before nodding slowly and rising. She returned, clutching something swaddled that looked far too small to be a baby. When she put the bundle in Ruby's arms, Ruby gasped. Here, no larger than a child's doll, was her own son, his tiny face blue-tinged and still.
No, she breathed.
She bent to kiss his forehead, startled, despite herself, to find it so cold.
No,
she whispered again.
You must come back.
The baby had Marcel's nose, the shape of his mouth. Ruby wondered what his eyes looked like, but they were already closed forever. His ears were tiny and freezing, his hair was downy, his chin no wider than the tip of Ruby's thumb.
How did I let you die?
My dear, Madame Daché said, gently taking the baby from Ruby's grasp when her tears had finally stopped falling.
It is not your fault. Sometimes all the love in the world can't protect a person against his fate.
Chapter 10. April 1941.
Marcel didn't come home the night of the stillbirth. Or the next. Ruby couldn't get out of bed. She knew she would never forgive herself for not protecting her child, though the Daché's kindly doctor friend had told her she wasn't to blame, that these things sometimes simply happen for no reason at all. Charlotte checked on her thrice a day, each time bringing food, which Ruby had no appetite for.
You mustn't worry, Ruby,
Charlotte said on the second night, when she delivered a watery soup of potatoes and beef.
You will have another baby one day. I know you will.
And though Ruby nodded and tried to smile, her heart was breaking. She knew with a dull certainty that there would be no more babies. She'd been deluding herself into thinking that a child would have fixed what was broken in her marriage. Even if Marcel was working for a good cause, he had abandoned her long ago. On the third night, Marcel came home just before midnight, and found Ruby propped up on pillows on the living room sofa, staring at a wall.
"What are you doing awake?" he asked.
"Where have you been?" she asked instead of replying.
"I had work to do. I told you, Ruby, this isn't something I can talk about."
"Were you out with your British friend, feeling that you were making some sort of difference in this goddamned war?" He looked startled.
"I am making a difference, Ruby. What are you going on about?"
She stared at him for a long time. What had she seen in him when their eyes first met across that cafe in New York? What had made her so sure that he was worth giving up her life for? She could hardly remember anymore.
"I lost the baby," she said.
"What?" But she knew he had heard her, for there was suddenly a storm of emotions playing out across his face. Sadness, surprise, guilt.
"Well, I'm very sorry," he said finally.
"Are you?"
"Ruby, maybe it's for the best."
"The best?" He might as well have ripped her heart out with his bare hands. "Our child is dead, Marcel."
"A baby is a liability in times like this."
"A liability? You believe he would have been a liability?" Something flickered in his eyes.
"The baby was a boy."
"He looked just like you," she whispered.
And then, before he could say anything else, she stood, cradling her empty belly, and walked into the bedroom, slamming the door behind her. She knew he wouldn't follow, even if a small part of her hoped he would. A few moments later, the front door of the apartment opened and closed. He was gone. As spring rolled into summer, and the baby's due date came and went without anyone remembering but Ruby, Marcel became more elusive, more absent, and Ruby found herself worrying less and less about him. Was it because she didn't care anymore, or because she knew he'd always resurface eventually? And while she resented the fact that he wouldn't give her the chance to understand what he was doing, she felt proud of him on some level. He was doing something to help. But what for? Nothing seemed to loosen the Nazis' stranglehold on the city, and people were being executed now for crimes as small as distributing anti-Nazi newsletters. Was that the kind of work Marcel was doing? Paris had gone dark, even in the midst of a vibrant summer. Electricity had become unreliable. Most nights the city was lit only by moonlight. With so many Parisians still in the countryside, and the ones who stayed muzzled by uncertainty and fear, the quiet felt strange and sinister. Police sirens wailed more loudly than usual, and every time the growl of an airplane engine materialized in the distance, people tensed, ready for the worst. In late July, Ruby finally received a letter from her mother, dated mid-May.
"Dearest Ruby," it said in neat, familiar script.
"Your father and I are fine. We've received your letters and gather that ours aren't making it to you. We are trying again, in hopes that one of our messages will get through. We're overjoyed to hear that you are having a baby, and we implore you again to consider coming home. If not for your own safety, then for your child's. We've spoken with our congressman's office, and they might be able to arrange safe passage for you. The news reports from Europe are terrifying, sweetheart. I'm sure Marcel would not only understand, but would agree that this decision is for the best. Perhaps he can even come with you. Please keep writing, and we will do the same. We know we will see you, and our grandchild, very soon. Your father sends his love."
Ruby folded the note carefully and slipped it back into the envelope, marveling that it had reached her at all. She didn't realize until her address smeared that she was crying. Her parents were expecting her to come home and to bring her baby with her. Receiving this letter now, months after it had been sent, was like a window to a past that she could never get back. There was no baby anymore, no chance for escape. Getting out of Paris would take an act of God, and Ruby had begun to wonder if he, like the French government, had deserted the city. Ruby dutifully wrote back, telling her mother about the loss of the baby. She sobbed as she wrote, once again seeing her son's tiny, silent body, feeling the chill of him deep in her heart. She knew she wouldn't be returning to the States, not while the war still raged, and she told her mother this. Each time she thought of boarding a ship back to America, she thought of the Dachets, and especially Charlotte. Abandoning them now, when they'd been there for her in her greatest hour of need, felt unthinkable. Ruby posted the letter and spent the rest of the day wandering the city with no real purpose in mind. It was self-destructive, she knew. If a Nazi soldier questioned her,
she wouldn't be able to explain where she was going, for the truth was, she was going nowhere. She should have been one of the mothers pushing a pram occupied by a cooing infant. Instead, she was alone, and as empty as she'd ever been in her life. Paris was still Paris, with the lovely flowers of summer and the fresh, sun-drenched air. But the city was a shadow of its former self, and the blossoms and scents that had once been a comfort seemed merely like window dressing. Ruby, too, had become a shadow of the person she used to be. How had she ever giggled with her friends in a dormitory room, swooned over Clark Gable on the big screen, agonized about which dress she'd wear to a party? Now, she couldn't remember the last time she'd laughed. She hadn't seen a movie in years. She wouldn't know how to behave at a social event if she somehow found herself at one.
"You seem very sad," Charlotte said that evening when she appeared at Ruby's door to invite her over for coffee.
One of her father's former customers had managed to get his hands on some real coffee beans, an incredible treat.
"Oh, I'm all right," Ruby reassured her. "But you're very kind to worry, Charlotte." "You know," the girl said after a moment, "things are never quite as dark as they seem."
Ruby smiled. "Is that right?" Charlotte nodded confidently.
"You see, when you look back on things later in life, it's sometimes easier to see the purpose. So perhaps for now it's best to try your hardest to focus on what lies ahead. The future is still something that can be changed, isn't it?"
"It seems to me that that's very good advice," Ruby said, her eyes damp.
"Thank you."
Charlotte looked pleased.
"So, you will come for coffee? There's something my parents would like to discuss with you."
Curious, Ruby followed Charlotte next door to their corner apartment, where she found Madame and Monsieur Daché at their table, a beautiful silver coffee pot and three ornate china cups before them.
"We had hoped you would join us," Madame Daché said, rising to kiss Ruby on both cheeks. "We wanted to share this with you."
"How very kind."
As Ruby sat down, Monsieur Daché began to pour. The heavenly aroma of coffee, so familiar yet so foreign these days, seemed to wrap the room in warmth. Madame Daché emerged from the kitchen a moment later with chocolates and a small bowl of sugar.
"Charlotte, dear, go get ready for bed."
"But I'd like some coffee, too, and I'd like to visit with Madame Benoit."
"We need to have a grown-up conversation," Madame Daché said firmly. "Please, my dear, you can visit with her tomorrow."
"I'm not a child anymore, you know."
But Charlotte said a terse goodnight to Ruby and her parents and headed toward the back of the apartment.
"There is a favor we would like to ask you," Monsieur Daché said,
after all three of them had taken a first sip of coffee and delighted in how wonderful it tasted.
"Yes, anything."
"After this summer, we think that perhaps Charlotte will not return to school. There are..." Monsieur Daché paused and began again. "There are circumstances that make it difficult now."
"I'm very sorry," Ruby said. The words were woefully inadequate.
"We are sorry, too," Madame Daché took over, glancing at her husband.
"This is not the France we knew."
Ruby nodded, and the three of them shared a moment of silent understanding before Madame Daché went on.
"I will take over her schooling here at home, but we would like for her to learn English, and we were wondering whether we might impose upon you to help."
"Of course," Ruby responded immediately. Not only did she owe the Dachets a debt, she would actually enjoy the opportunity to spend more time with the girl.
"We feel that it will be an important language for her to know in the future," Madame Daché continued.
"Britain will help us win this war," Monsieur Daché added. "And we would like to know that Charlotte's future might include working with them."
"Also," Madame Daché said, locking eyes with her husband, "we do not know what this war will bring for Jews. There are terrible rumors of things happening in the East.
The Dachets exchanged looks.
As you may know, Sarah is from Poland, Monsieur Dachet said. She came to France as a small child with her parents, but she still has many family members who, until recently, were living near Krakow. We do not know what has become of them. As for me, my father is French, but my mother is from Poland too, and in fact, I was born there when she was on a journey to visit her parents.
I assumed you were both born in France. Monsieur Dachet shook his head.
Some of the reports from Poland in the last months.
He trailed off.
The Germans are sending Jews to work camps, Madame Dachet said bluntly, her gaze far away, and there are rumors that some of them are dying.
But, you see, it's impossible to know the truth, because things are often greatly exaggerated, Monsieur Dachet said quickly. In any case, we feel strongly that such a thing would never happen here. The French will not turn on their own. We must endure the restrictions they have been placed upon us, but we will survive this.
Still, we feel that Charlotte, knowing English, will give her an advantage, whatever the future should bring, Madame Dachet said.
When she looked up, Ruby could see in her eyes that she didn't share her husband's optimism. The coffee on the table between them was going cold, but Ruby was no longer thinking of what a rare treat it was. What must it be like to fear for your child's future this way? She had been powerless to protect her own child, but she could be there for Charlotte if it came to that. And that was something. There were 1,000 things Ruby wanted to say, 100 promises she wanted to make. But the Dachets were proud, and Ruby knew they weren't looking for platitudes. They were looking for hope.
It would be my pleasure to help Charlotte learn English, she said. When shall we begin?
By mid-August, the heat was sweltering, and the air in Paris seemed strangely still, as if the city itself was holding its breath. Ruby had been working with Charlotte for 3 weeks, meeting with her every Thursday afternoon. Ruby had never taught a language before, but she had begun to study French when she was just a bit younger than Charlotte was now, so she tried to remember how she had learned. Small words first, the kind you'd teach a young child, followed by pronouns and basic verb conjugations. English seemed more difficult than French, for it drew from so many different languages. But Ruby found Charlotte an apt pupil.
"Do you miss Monsieur Benoit?"
Charlotte asked late one afternoon as their lesson was concluding. Ruby had taught her the numbers that day, all the way up to 100, and Charlotte had managed to conjugate a few simple verbs.
"Miss him?"
Ruby was puzzled. "He hasn't gone anywhere."
Charlotte shrugged. "I only mean that he's often away. I wonder if it's hard for you being alone."
Ruby took a deep breath. Charlotte didn't miss a thing. "In truth, I think it is easier to be by myself than to be with someone who doesn't seem to trust me." She worried that it was the wrong thing to say to a child, but Charlotte nodded in immediate understanding.
"You wish he would not keep secrets from you?"
Ruby blinked. "Yes."
"I wish that, too."
Later, after Charlotte had gone, Ruby was left wondering what the girl had meant. How had she guessed that Marcel was keeping secrets? Marcel surprised Ruby by arriving home at 6 that evening, toting a fresh chicken wrapped in newspaper.
"I've brought dinner," he said.
"But where did you get it?" Certainly, this wasn't the sort of thing that was easy to come by anymore. Her mouth watered, but she could also feel her stomach twisting with concern. He frowned.
"Does it matter? I've done nothing wrong, if that's what you're suggesting. I had hoped you would be as excited as I am about the prospect of a good meal."
"I'm sorry."
Marcel studied her for a minute, then seemed to deflate.
"No, I suppose I don't blame you."
He walked into the bedroom without another word, and Ruby began to prepare the chicken to roast. She would use the carcass for broth later, and would share some soup with the Dachets. She had just slid the chicken into the oven when Marcel reappeared in the kitchen, his tie gone and his shirt loosened at the collar, he looked more relaxed than she'd seen him in months. Handsome, even.
It smells wonderful in here.